CliffCentral.com.
Is this thing on? You're listening to The Bounce Show. It's live. Well, not this bit, but it's live on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, Blatt.
Sorry, scrap that, delete it. CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.
All right, welcome to The Bounce Show, 5th of September. Big, big show today. We've got an ex-Bok in the studio. And, well, it's a very big week for Springbok news in general. I've been writing a few things and people have been very angry. And, well, everybody loves a winner, right? And the Springboks have been much loved in the past when they were winning. But the last few years, we've been sold all kinds of stories about how it's a process and we're getting there and we're trying new things. And, you know, you've got to respect the players, this, this and that. I think the whole Bok supporting public is kind of getting a little bit upset with all this. They're getting a little bit impatient with all this. So I thought getting in Dave van Heslen. Dave, is that how I pronounce your name properly?
That is how you pronounce it. It's David van Heslen. But
David van Heslen.
I kind of gave up after a while when I was living in Kimberley and people kept saying Dave van Heslen, Dave van Heslen, and I ended up just going, yeah, Dave van Heslen.
Also, if you try getting Afrikaans, you got to say von instead of fun.
It was difficult.
I guess there's also going to be more of a challenge. So Dave's going to be in here to, well, I think answer a lot of my questions. I'm a very curious person. You can tell by my blogging style. I throw a lot of stuff out there. And this week, actually, I threw out an open letter to Brendan Fenter, who has now blocked me and the entire supporting Bok public out there on Twitter. Of course, I'll never get an answer from that. So I thought if I bring in Dave, Dave's a guy who's obviously been around the block more than a few occasions. I don't mean that in any disrespect, Dave, of course.
None taken.
You're an experienced man. You're 42 years of age. So you're older than me, which means your seniority is already secured. But of course, Dave's done the whole thing. Dave's been a fantastic young age group player. He went to the levels of Curry Cup. Grick was probably best side I've ever known about. Dave was instrumental to that team. He then played for the Bok. He's played Super Rugby. He's played overseas. This guy knows everything you need to know about rugby right now. And maybe he can give some better insights than maybe a Bok coach that's saying that, well, we're not going to beat the All Blacks this weekend. Yeah, the things that we get fed in the media aren't that great. So that is what today's show is going to be. If you want to get in touch with the show live on WhatsApp, 079-748-2090. If you want to tweet any questions through to Dave or just anything about the show today, me at Follow the Bounce. Just go for that one. Wow, there's already a couple of questions here for you, Dave. I'm going to have to screen these. So yeah, that's how you get involved in the show. Otherwise, on the WeChat, if you're listening via WeChat, it's just the Cliff Central official account. And today, if everyone know what the show looks like, well, if listening live a little bit later when I put this show onto the bounce.co.za, it will be in a visual form. I'll make a little video around this because I got Dave in studio. This is why I'm doing it. Dave, if it was just me, I wouldn't even bother. All right. So, obviously, I won't touch on all the big things that are happening in sport right now because, well, there are times for that. Today, it's all about the Bok and it's all about Dave, who has come into the studio today. Dave, do you do many interviews like this?
I've had a foray into a bit of commentating. Really enjoyed that. I do a couple of interviews. I do a lot of stuff with the SA Legends, so they're always interviewing us on that show. So not used to it. Yeah, obviously not normally as controversial as Cliff Central, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I mean, you're putting us on right off the bat there. We're not controversial. We like truth.
So, well, Dave, I'm happy with that.
Obviously, growing up in South Africa as a young, talented schoolboy, you went to Bishops, right?
I went to Bishops, yeah.
Okay, cool. It's obviously the big dream to play for the Bok. That is what every kid who is from back in the day playing in like the back garden rugby with siblings, whatever it is, playing for the Bok is the ultimate.
It was. I mean, and it was from a very young age that I wanted to play for the Bok. You know, I think we should maybe talk about that. I mean, that still is one of the best teams I was ever involved in. My 92 team at Bishops. We played the rugby.
It takes 2 minutes for a Bishops
boy to tell you. How do you know that you went to Bishops? How do you know someone went to Bishops? Because they normally tell you. You beat me to it, so I have to say something. But it was one of the best teams I was involved in because the kind of rugby played is what New Zealanders play now. It's what we were taught by Basil Bay. We were taught running rugby. We were taught to running lines. We were taught support lines, and we're taught skills. And suddenly I left, you know, school rugby, and I was taught a completely different type of rugby where it was, you know, intimidation and bashing it up, and it was different for me. It wasn't the rugby that I learned. So New Zealand rugby is the rugby that inspires me. It's what I think we should have been playing all along. Yes, we've got, you know, big players, but we can't even intimidate the All Blacks anymore.
Far from it. No, any kind of confrontation. But it's a good point you raise here. Now, that's another reason why I wanted to get you in today. I think your career has been one that has seen, like I said, been around the block more than a few times. You've seen different elements and maybe what's been falling out as to why the box are where they are right now. Now, I went to One Big Boys High School, also one of the Cape schools there. So we played against you guys twice a year.
But you guys just have knives in your socks, didn't you?
Wow, okay, well, get the stereotypes out of the way early on here. And no, but you're so right. Like, schoolboy rugby, I still believe, is one of the greatest things you can watch. Because you watch stuff and the kids throw the ball around because
they're enjoying it.
They're enjoying it. There we go.
I mean, listen, I need to mention, in my team, I had Herschel Gibbs at fly half, who, you know, we all believe would have been a Springbok if he'd decided to go that route. Yeah. We had Robbie Fleck on the bench because he couldn't make the first team. And we had Sal Bomboom at eighth man.
But that's because he went to Weinberg and you guys were being horrible
to him. We were being horrible to him. Obviously, he came through eventually and deservedly so. But I mean, that's how good our 92 team was. It was a really good rugby team and it had some really talented players in it.
So from there, obviously, like you said, I mean, the Bishops under Basil Bayer was always about running the ball wonderfully well. From your own half, it was always about running. It's a very simplistic, very interesting form of rugby to kind of play against because it would be we always knew it was going to be a tough game.
Yeah.
You play against the Afrikaans schools, they either had beards or were just 2 foot taller than you.
And they weren't wearing rugby boots either.
You play against Saxe or Rondebosch, you're basically playing against kids who can't be away from their mother for more than 5 minutes. But with you guys, it was. And it was great running rugby, obviously, under Basil Bayer.
It was.
So from there, where did your career take you from that?
Well, I decided, whether it was a bright decision or not, I decided to go to Stellenbosch University. It probably would have been a better idea to go to UCT, but my parents had been at Stellenbosch. It's the biggest rugby club still in the world.
Yep.
So we have no excuse for depth, which is the biggest rugby club in the world. And so I decided to go to Stellenbosch, and I thought if I could make it at Stellenbosch, I could make it anywhere. So that was my decision. So I went there, struggled along. I still remember getting dropped from the first team into Corsairs twice in one season. I played for the first team, got man of the match, and in the following week I got back on the looked on the board and I thought there was a mistake. Arrived and Davi Snyman was the coach, and I went to him and I was like, Davi, you know, why have I been dropped? I mean, I'd say, oh, where's my name? He goes, oh, put his hand on my shoulder. Oh, Dave, why did I drop you? And you go, yeah, you're in Corsairs this week. And I literally had to go back to my Corsairs, play there, and slowly work my way back again.
Was that because he felt that you were a talent that needed to be hardened up, or is he just being
possibly sick? I mean, listen, a bit of both, I think. I don't know. I'm still trying to understand it. The mentality back then was, you know, there was a lot of Afrikaans at Stellenbosch. Lectures were in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
I was a soti. I think I tried to grow my hair at that stage because I'd always wanted to believe it. I always wanted to when I left school. At school, I had this ridiculous middle parting. So I
was the 90s, Dave. You're forgiven.
Yeah, I'm forgiven. Hopefully.
And then do you feel from going from school rugby into the university setup, was rugby becoming more restrictive? Was it more competitive? You know, was it tighter, less enjoyable?
No, I love Stellenbosch University rugby.
It was still in that frame. It was still free-flowing.
It was free-flowing. And I mean, the struggles I had, I suppose the struggles any rugby player will have, you know, and maybe I did need to be hardened up, to be honest. You know, I think things had come easy to me up until then, and at Bishops we won pretty much everything. We beat all the big schools. I mean, we beat Cornet Crickers, Paul Boys, we beat Paul Jim, we thumped Paul Jim, we thumped Paul Roos. So it, you know, things are supposed to become a bit easier, I suppose. So I got to Stellenbosch, I probably needed to be hardened up a bit, and maybe that's one of the reasons Davi Snyman did that to me, maybe to harden me up. It worked.
You weren't dating his daughter or anything like that.
No. I was not dating his daughter.
Okay, so I mean, from here the progress is pretty solid. You went to a fantastic school, great pedigree. You're with a tremendous crop of players. Stellenbosch University, it is still the biggest rugby club in the world, as you say.
Yeah.
From there, it would have been straight to be like, how do I get into province team? Was that the next goal?
That was the next goal. I played province under 21. Yeah. I have this tendency to drift, and I've got to give a special mention to my uncle, honestly, because I'd started to drift and I'd started to become a normal student, a regular student, and go out and party a bit.
Dollar brandy coke for like $10 back in those days.
Exactly. Sure. I mean, you can't turn that down. And then my uncle took me out one night. I'll never remember. It was the 27th of December. I can't remember the exact year. I could, if I thought about it, but I can't remember the exact year, but he said, come, we're going to go out for a few drinks. And I thought, this is great. My uncle wants to take me on the piss, you know. So yeah. Went out with him, and he got me properly drunk, where I vomited a few times, and he kept giving me more and more and more to drink. And the next morning when I woke up, he then came up, and I had the world's worst hangover, and he says to me, okay, Dave, what do you want to do with your life? He says, if you want to do that every night and go get pissed, awesome. That's amazing. But you have a talent. Like, these students, they don't know what they want to do with their lives. They're still trying to work it out. You know, they're still deciding what degrees to do. You know what you're good at, and you're good enough to play for the Box, but you're pissing it away. So make a choice. Carry on. I don't care. It's your life. Or you can focus. And it was literally from that day I didn't touch a drink, and I trained my ass off. This must have been 97, I think, or 96, one of the two. And literally from there, I stopped getting messed around by the coaches at Stellenbosch. I started to play in the first team more regularly. Yeah. And I teamed up with the infamous combination of myself and Gaffi de Toy.
Right.
And that's where I met Gaffi, and we started to play more regularly for the first team. And that's when we got spotted by Andre Markov.
Okay, so back then, obviously, you had the links to Western Province, and that was very much the dream.
Yeah.
Now, with these big unions, we all know that talent doesn't always go in straight up. You know, other unions have opportunities for guys, and you're thinking, well, I can either sit on the bench or I can go play first team rugby. Was that kind of the consideration with Andre Markov giving the opportunity?
Yeah, okay, well, let's put it like this. I was invited to a Western Province after the Western Province under 21. After I'd finished Western Province under 21, I was invited to a Western Province training session the coach who owns most of Amanas.
Oh, Harry Fillion.
Yeah, so he invited me to a training session, one training session. I held bags for the entire session, and then was the message I got was I was too small to play professional rugby.
But you're great at holding bags.
But I was great at holding bags. It was a great session. And then I went back to Stellenbosch, and I remember a guy called Charles Holwell who was playing lock for us, and he missed a game. And the following week, I asked him on the Monday, I said, where were you last weekend? He said, no, he went for a trial at Griquas. So I said, Griquas, Kimberley. He said, yeah. I said, why would you go there? I said, wild horses couldn't drag me there. Honestly, this is a true story. I said, wild horses couldn't drag me there. And then the end of the season came, I think it was Yuppie Adlam, I think, that Province signed, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he was like a flanker.
He was the fourth loose forward, yeah.
Yeah, he's that guy. So they contracted him. And I was like, clearly, okay, I'm not in the plans for Western Province here. And I then got I used to live in a dormitory, in a commune, whatever you want to call it. And we had a tiki box in our house. And one day I got a call, and one of my housemates came and said, Andre Markov's on the phone to you. So I was like, what? So I went to the phone, picked up, and said, hello, David, it's Andre Markov here. And I went, yeah, sure. Seriously, who's this? He said, no, it's Andre Markov. And he said, I've been watching you, and I want you and Gaffi, and I can't remember if there was one or two others, but I want you to come to Griquas. I'm putting a team together, and I'd like you to come in. And I think the main reason I went was because Gaffi was going, and I knew what our combination was like. So,
and obviously, I mean, he was a prodigious talent from an early age. He was big,
massive
strong,
talent.
Massive,
I mean,
boots.
I still, to this day, he could have been a great. He genuinely could have been a great in South African rugby.
Yeah, it is kind of sad. That's the thing I want to touch upon today is how talent is developed in this country. So, I mean, obviously, you're given the opportunity, you can go play Currie Cup. You're young and impressionable. At the same time, you're smart enough to know this is your career and this is an opportunity to go forth. Was it as simple as going there and going, okay, cool, this is me?
Listen, I'm an impulsive kind of guy, and I don't think I thought it through very hard besides that Gaffi was going. And when I remember driving in my little city Golf, and seeing all the red sand and the khaki shorts and going, uh-oh, okay, what have I done here? So I got there, and I made a decision very quickly that I was, by the way, I lived in the only house that you could probably see from space. I arrived at night, and it was like glowing. It was bright yellow with a blue roof. And I'm not joking, it sticks with me to this day. This was Kimberley. And I got there, and I thought, okay, I've got to play really well because I've got to get myself out of here. I've got to play myself into a big team. And that was kind of my thought process.
That's such a great way of going about it.
Well, I knew I couldn't. Listen, I'm a society man at heart.
Well, look, you weren't looking to meet someone and settle down in Kimberley, I take it.
No, I knew that this was, I love my time. Don't get me wrong. I love my time at Greg because the people, the coaches that we had, were amazing. And it was one of the reasons that I managed to play good rugby because Andre Markov was one of the most amazing coaches, amazing people I've ever met. There was Doc Poole as well, who was a tough character, but he got the best out of you. And I loved that setup. And I loved the guys. The guys were amazing. It just wasn't where I was going to be, buying my holiday home or setting up life.
But, you were still very young at the stage, and Griquas were fantastic. Was it the 98 season?
It was the 98 season.
98 season. That, with you and Khafi as the halfback pairing, that team was solid. It really was. And that was back when the Currie Cup still meant a fair amount.
Yeah.
And you guys were looking like you're going to be favorites. You had a home final, right?
This is the thing. We'd won every game in the group stages, so to speak. And we had a home semi-final, and we had this freak thunderstorm where we had to delay the game by 2 hours. And most of our guys had never seen rain in their lives. This is the high felt. And it was like a freak thunderstorm that was really bad. And we were playing against Western Province, and it suited them down to the ground. It put our guys out, and we ended up losing in a game that we really should have won, and we would have then had a home final as well.
Oh, that must have been so heartbreaking. But now what, you were 22, 23 at the stage?
Something like that.
And from there, where did you think your career was going to be next after this? You've had a great season with Griquas. What did you think was the next step for you?
At that stage, I wasn't thinking about where next. I knew my heart was always with Province. It had been my dream to play Western Province. Obviously the Springboks, but I wanted to play Province. That's the team I used to, the Coral Duplessis of the world. Those are the guys I looked up to, Devon Serfontein, still one of my heroes, that was what I wanted to do, but that opportunity never came. Funny enough, it did in 2000. I got drafted to play one season there for the Stormers, which I loved. The next step I was then. This is how it actually worked. That whole month and a half that I was with the Springboks, Andre Markov.
Wait, Dave, you're jumping far ahead here.
No, but you're asking about the step. I guess it's that Andre Markov had decided to. He'd been signed as the coach for the Sharks. Yeah. And so he wanted to take players with him that he obviously believed in. And I was lucky enough to be one of those guys. Okay. So that was the next step. I was following the coach that had helped me get my career to where it had been at that stage.
Okay. But as we all know from the record books, you went from there basically to the Springbok setup. 1999 was a huge year in your life.
It was.
And how did that come about? Was it again another phone call you didn't quite believe, or
it was a little? I believed that I was good enough. I believed, maybe naively so, that you're going to be picked at 22. Remember, the thing we haven't touched on is that back in those days, there was quite a void between leaving school and then making your first team varsity. It's not like now. The guys are drafted out of school. They already have contracts, and they go into academies and all kinds of things. The maturity of the players it happens a lot quicker these days. So you get a guy like Ricky Leone or whatever that comes in at 20 years old and is ready to play Test rugby. We weren't at that stage. You don't have mentors. You don't have anyone to groom you. You have no one to blood you. Nothing. You have this void, and you've got to get through that yourself. I kind of lost the track of what I was saying, but there's...
The progression from Currie Cup to the Springboks.
Yeah, so I naively believed, that I was good enough and I played well enough in that season. There were articles saying that, these are the next guys that are going to be coming through. But, in the back of the mind, you don't really know. But then I got a call. The call came from Andre Markov to say to me, "Dave, listen, I need to be ready. There's going to be an announcement on TV or whatever it was going to be that night, and that I was going to be a Springbok." It was just obviously one of the that feeling you can't explain that feeling. I can sit here and try and explain it to you, but I can't. It is just
It came from him, so you could therefore trust it.
Of course, you can trust it. Yeah,
and in all respect to the process, your career was on the up and up. You're not showing any signs of slowing down. You're a young, talented guy coming through, one half of a very like potent halfback pairing. So, I mean, it was kind of natural. It wasn't like the biggest shot out of the dark. I know from a rugby fan's perspective, there were established players like Bram van Straaten in the mix. They were like someone like Werner Swanepoel.
Yeah.
So obviously there was the tried and tested. But at the coach at that stage was, of course, Nick Mallett, who just came off that world record run.
Yes, he had.
So again, this is a stage, I mean, you could not go into a better box setup than this, essentially thinking.
Well, if you think about it, I agree and disagree. There were a couple of guys that had, you know, the Henry Honeyballs had now stopped playing. Those, like the James Smalls, I can't remember. It was that kind of era where those big names had kind of stopped, you know, playing Springbok rugby. So there was a new setup.
There was a decent nucleus in that side.
There was a decent nucleus. Really, no, there was a decent nucleus. But there had been some senior players that had started to, or had stopped playing for the box. So there were a number of new players. I mean, I remember if you look in that team, there was Cornet Kriecher, there was Brayton Paulser, Monty. These guys were all...
Crane Otto was still there. Oster Rant was still playing.
Yeah.
Prior to his resurgence under Jake. it was solid.
Yeah.
And your debut... Sorry, we're going to have to start flying through your career here. I didn't realize it was actually a substantial story. Again, no disrespect. It was like, I want to talk to you about the box and I want to talk to you about current day. But this is fascinating for me.
Okay.
Your debut was against Italy.
Yes, it was. I played. Came off the bench? Came off the bench in PE.
74-3. Okay, so first taste of Bok rugby. Easy game.
Easy game.
Next matchup against Italy, you guys won 101-0.
Yeah.
You scored two tries.
Yeah.
This international rugby gig sounds like the business.
It was. And funny enough, as much as it was against Italy, and as much as it was 101-0, I think as a scrum half, it was one of my best games that I played.
Yeah.
Like I really, my passing was good, my kicking was good, my break. Yeah, I just felt good about it. Yeah, I was with Cuffy in that game.
And Cuffy started that game as well.
Yeah, and I felt good about my game. It wasn't like we were playing, you know, yes, I mean, it was 101-0, but I felt that my basics were good and I felt confident about the way that my game was at that stage.
So from there, obviously great start to the season. The Bok then went to Wales.
Yes.
Now, you and Cuffy were then benched for that match, and it was back to van Straaten and Swanepoel as the halfback pairing.
Yeah.
Wales won that match 29-19, but it was a strange kind of match because it was more like a tune-up to the Tri Nations back then, right? It wasn't really... Yeah. It was kind of like, we had a bit of a gap, let's go play this match.
Yeah, and remember the stadium wasn't finished. It was the first game in the Millennium Stadium. Yes. It wasn't finished, so they only had half the capacity that it was capable of. I came off the bench. I think the game was already lost, and I think I did decently in under those circumstances. And I think that's probably one of the reasons. I can't guess why we were picked, but I think it was one of the reasons was why we were then picked.
But now at this stage, again, like going to the psyche of a team and how a team vibe feels, what did you feel the Bok camp was like back then? You had a great start. You're playing this match, didn't go so well, but now you got the Tri Nations ahead. Was it still like, did you feel really great about being in the setup? Did you feel the coach was still very much in command, that kind of stuff? Was it a good place?
Listen, I mean, I was on cloud nine, you know, so like maybe I was missing a lot of it. You know, I was playing, I'd been picked to play against the All Blacks. I mean, who gets to do that?
Yeah, which is obviously the next step here.
Yeah, and, you know, I hadn't actually stopped to think that, you know, was this the next step, the right step for my career? You know, was I ready for this? You know, I had played limited full Super Rugby games. I'd been more of an impact player and done really well. And I think this is why I credit Andre Markgraaf for making me the player that I was becoming, is because he was putting me on every single match I knew with at least 20 to go. No less than that, I was coming on. And I'd play every game, no matter whether we were drawing, winning, losing, and he would build me. And then I played, you know, towards the end of that Super Rugby season where I came and played some full matches and really played well. So it happened quite quickly. So, you know, maybe, you know, should I have played another season of Super Rugby? You know, possibly.
Well, yeah, I guess it's hard enough. But it's also the thing is like, this is my opportunity. I'm going to take it because I feel I'm ready for it. So Nick Mallett then picked you and Cuffy de Toy to take on the mighty All Blacks.
Yeah.
In New Zealand.
Yeah.
What was that, because the team wanted to have a different sort of game plan? I mean, how does a pivotal selection like this, where seniors like van Straaten and Swanepoel are now benched, did he have a special message for you individually, or did he chat to you guys and say, look, we're going in this direction, we're picking these youngsters, this is what's going to happen today? Or was it very much like, well, you guys are picked, it's business as usual?
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's quite a long time ago, so I can't remember the exact detail of how or why we were picked. If you think about it, we were playing down in Dunedin, and it rains almost every day.
Exactly.
Okay, now I'm a scrum off that came from Bishops, like I've told you. And
sorry, I'm going to write it in the podcast from Bishops.
And I was a running rugby kind of player. that's what I wanted to do. I like to break, and I like to, you know, I was that type of rugby player. We trained the entire week. We trained box kicking all week. We trained from everywhere. Khafi was going to kick, or I was going to kick. So, which was unnatural for me.
And now, was this even something you've done at Griquas level? Not.
I mean, yes. I mean, we had, but and like I said, I came from a school where we didn't do that. So I was only now doing this in my professional career, which was, you know, was a very short time if you think about it in comparison to, like, we can talk about the New Zealanders at some point. They taught a specific brand of rugby from, you know, 5 years old. They all play it. And I've been playing a specific type of rugby to a certain stage, and then all of a sudden now I'm having to learn these other skills, which are necessary. But remember, it wasn't as professional back then as it is now, and you have to have,
well, especially in the technical aspects, like
technical
that.
Aspects, yeah. But to be honest, I still remember the captain's run. We were doing the box kicks, and I was landing them on a tiki. I mean, I remember Nick Mallett saying to me, "Dave, honestly, save some for the game." I remember that comment specifically. So it wasn't that I was struggling in that department. I had it under control.
Okay, so you get into the big game, and a big game of what it was. But back then, like, those games were very tight. It's not like the 50 average that you get now between the All Blacks and the box. So the end result, they're being 28-0.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is just a horror match. People are outraged that the box cannot score a point. And it was a hammering back in those days.
It was.
You know, whenever there's a bad loss for the box, there's got to be a scapegoat. It can't be Nick Mallett because he's been this fantastic hero of a coach. It's got to be, I don't know, maybe those two youngsters who started at 9 and 10. Did you feel like a lot of responsibility on your shoulders just from that match?
Yeah, I did. Listen, I didn't have my best game. I mean, let's be honest. But to get crucified like I did was unnecessary. I mean, digging up the past is like, you know, digging up a body. I mean, it's going to be gruesome and it's unnecessary. But yeah, you might.
Sorry, Dave. I don't want to.
I mean, not for me. Not for me. I don't like. You know, I've learned so much from it, and okay. I'm okay with it. That's why. I mean, the tweet that got me into the studio here. I was making light of a sad day. It was a sad day for all of us.
Sure.
You know, and we passionate South Africans. I'm not here to mock South Africa or the Springboks. I want us to win. But you know. So it's just we're going to dig it up. I got no problem with it. And I'll say where I believe Nick Mallett went wrong. You know, to this day, I haven't got a phone call from him. So in my mind, I'm still in that Springbok team. I was never dropped. If you know what I mean, I'll make a joke out of it. But I never got a call. I woke up the next morning.
So what happened? I mean, the Boxers took a 28-0 drubbing and then straight to Australia. And then what? Okay, guys, we can do better this week.
Yeah, well, we had.
Aren't playing.
No, well, we obviously had a week. It was quite a week, and we had a video session where I was myself and Khafi were lambasted. We were also lambasted in the press. I remember waking up and seeing the New Zealand Herald and seeing the comments that Nick Mallett made and saying his grandmother could have played better and it was all our fault. And I mean, that kind of stuff is not necessary. I mean, you look at.
No, that's not how you build a young career.
No, it's not how you build it. And you look at the way, I mean, you look at the way Steve Hansen is and the way, I mean, he's fielded some tough questions of people that have, you know, played bad games. And it's the way you support your team. It's the way I've applied myself in my business. You know, you've got to support people.
Sure.
You know, you're good enough clearly to play, or you're good enough to be picked. So you've got to be good enough to survive more than one game, surely.
Yeah, well, exactly. So that was it. You were out in that match. The next match was Australia versus SA, and, well, 32-6. You can take your pick, which was the worst loss, actually.
I played on the wing against Ben Tune.
Okay. So, right. So, and Dave, that was it, eh?
From that was it.
12th June to 17th of July. That was your BOC career in a nutshell. Thanks for coming. You did very well. Yeah. Hope you enjoy the jerseys.
Yeah.
Was it really as horrible as that? I mean, you're a young guy. Your career is going on the up and up. You've done nothing wrong to this point. You're given a chance. And as you said, you admitted it wasn't your best game. But when the team loses 28-0, it's not because the scrum off didn't do well. I mean, there's other factors here. And that was it. Nick Mallett didn't talk to you after that.
Yeah.
Listen, the other stages of your career wasn't like, how's it going?
No, listen, I mean, I don't want to blame Nick. He's a fantastic guy. I mean, and he's well respected. I've got no issue with the guy. I mean, I think we should be adult enough to be able to talk about things like this.
Sure.
You know, and I think I would have appreciated a phone call. I probably still would, honestly, and I'd probably, like, you know, have a beer and just say, like, hey, these things happen.
Be a very long phone call, though, huh? Nick Mallett does not do a small conversation.
I read, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that happened, but yeah, it was pretty much like that. And from there, there's a whole sequence of events happened. People keep, you know, thinking, oh, it was, you know, Nick Mallett that ruined me. I've got to state this. It wasn't. I was fine. You know, I was fine. I'd gone. This game had happened, and I was ready to go back and rebuild or start playing again. That's all I wanted to do. But we had this whole sequence of events, and which I don't know if you've got time for. I can tell you.
Oh, Dave, we've got 20 full minutes. We can carry on here.
Well, you don't want to talk about current rugby. I mean, this is not the Dave Van Heslin show.
No, it really is, actually. I mean, I'm really into this story. Maybe make it a two-part series here. Because I did. Like, I really wanted to get you in today to talk about how I believe, and many people believe as well, that the bar's been lowered with the box. You know, like, you experienced one of the worst losses in BOC history.
But
Dave, if we lose 28-0 to the All Blacks this weekend, people are going to go, yeah, not so bad.
Not so bad. That's what they're going to say. We're accepting mediocrity. Exactly. And I mean, like, yes, you know, maybe it wasn't right for Nick Mallett or whoever to completely crucify me. But yes, when you're playing for the box, you know, you are the CEO of your business. Yep. You are the best in your position, and you are expected maintain a certain standard. 28-0 is not good enough.
Something if you're playing, yeah.
If you want to be the best in the world, and we are not a team that wants to, you know, play against Czechoslovakia. We want to play against New Zealand and beat them.
Exactly, play against
and not be happy with losing 28-0 to them.
Okay, so from there, I mean, your career. Okay, so this is a setback. That's all it is. It's a setback.
Yeah.
You then went down to the Stormers and played there.
No, well, I'll tell you. Okay, I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. Okay. But I went back to Griquas, and Griquas were Griquas had their Currie Cup team, and Swester Brain was the coach, and he didn't want to change his team because it was right near the end, and so he put me onto the bench because he wanted continuity, and obviously this thing had happened at New Zealand, so I got a call from Ian Mack, and he said, "Dave, what are you doing on the bench?" So I said, "Well, this is what happened." He said, "Get down to the Sharks immediately," because I'd already signed. He said, "Come down now."
Yeah.
So I went down, and funny enough, the weekend I got there, I arrived in Durban, and I was invited to watch the Sharks game, and they didn't have a scrum off because they were injured, and so they were going to play me. And they took Craig Davidson, who had been playing fly off up until then, okay, and put him in at scrum off. And he had a blinder.
Yeah.
So I went from leaving Springboks to leaving Griquas to coming to the Sharks, and now you got this guy playing a blinder. So I'm like, okay. So I'm like,
bench to bench.
I'm bench to bench to bench. Well, drop to bench to bench. So the season ended, and we all went away. I went and, you know, gathered my thoughts and trained, and I came back, and I could just, and Hughes Edwards had been made the coach. And I don't know if you remember that season, he lost every single game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In hindsight, I wish he hadn't, and I'll tell you now why. So I got back to the Sharks, and remember that it was still in those days when EP was part of the Sharks.
Yes.
And they had to have representation from the different provinces. So I knew Chad Alcock was going to be picked for the Super Rugby squad.
Yeah.
Craig Davidson ended the season and played blinders. He was going to get picked. So I knew I was on a hiding to nothing. But we then got called in, myself, Henty Martins, Craig and Chad got called in and said, "Listen, we've got four good scrum offs here. The Stormers are struggling. They don't have it. They've got one in Dan Vinsale. Who of you wants to go to Cape Town?" So I looked at that and I thought, let me go. I'm happy to go to Cape Town.
I'll take it for the team.
But I also knew I was going to be playing B team rugby if I stayed in Durban. So I went down to the Stormers, played a season there. Bit of politics, which, yeah, I started the first three games. And then a group of the guys went and said, "Well, why is Dave playing? Why is he starting? Because, you know, Dan Vinsale's a local boy and he should be playing and Dave should be benching." And I've got that from some of the players who came and told me after that's what happened. So I spent the rest of the season on the bench. I then, you know, I was getting frustrated. But I still remember wanting to play, just couldn't wait to play. And I remember sitting outside Ian Solomon's door wanting to talk to him and say, "Why? You told me you were resting me, and now I'm being resting for seven games. I'm ready to play again."
Yeah, I'm pretty fresh.
I'm pretty fresh. Put me back on the And the Stormers played well that season, eh? We did very well.
Yeah.
The Sharks did not. They lost pretty much every game, I think, and we beat them in Durban. But then after that, I came back, and obviously Hughie Edwards hadn't had the best time, and he got fired. And this is where it went pear for me, is that Rudolph Strahle was made the coach.
Okay. No, made the coach of the Sharks.
Of the Sharks, yeah.
Right, remember that?
Yeah. So I had a sequence of events, and I mean, I'm not going to hold anything back. The guy made me hate the game.
Just because
he took my absolute love for the game and ruined it.
Now, was that again because he wasn't putting you in the team, or just the way he was as a coach?
Just the way he was as a coach. I mean, you know, he had a very negative way of coaching people. It was negative motivation. We would play touch rugby to warm up, and you would step five people, sprint the length of the field, score a try, and walk back because you're tired, and you would then punish everyone because I was walking, or someone was walking. So I'm going, so you're punishing people for doing well. He'd take us into the bush and make us push tractor tires around, and you know, it was just I'm not that guy, you know. And you need to, like, to me, you need to learn to build people up, not break them down and think that's going to make them tougher. Yes, tough love sometimes works, like Andre Markov did with me.
Yeah.
Even though I knew I should be starting, he kept putting me on the bench, but kept motivating, telling me to keep playing, keep working on this.
It was a form of empowerment.
So I was more and more motivated to play. Rudolf Stahli didn't do that. He literally went into my chest, ripped my love of the game, and just stood on it.
Now, David, when you mention it like that, and then obviously we all know what happened with Rudolf's career from there, becoming Bok coach,
yeah, he did.
Came stalled it out, all that kind of stuff. I think he might have ripped the game out of a few people's hearts.
Yeah. And
but it's an old school kind of mentality that I believe still exists somewhere. And like, you know, when you see Brendan Fenter blocking everybody on Twitter and you see the sort of head in the sand approach to a couple of things, I almost feel like this mindset around rugby is ingrained in every single level, and there's great talented youngsters, there's great talented people. We want to talk transformation. I mean, it's tough for anybody to make it through rugby, okay? If you have this mindset around, oh, transformation is going to be so simple, just pick this guy, this guy, this guy. There's levels everywhere, but there's this old school mentality, which obviously Rudolf was back. I mean, I'm sure he's changed now. People with the Lions say he's a changed man.
Yeah, I think that's because they keep him in an office in a white coat and they don't allow him out of there. Not allowed to talk to anyone. Now, I'm not saying that he doesn't have ability. I think he's got the people skills of a floor tile.
Right. Which, you know, this is a sport where you need a hell of a lot more than the floor tile.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I can't blame everything. Listen, I played my part too. Okay, I drifted and I went off and I was partying too much. I did, because I was almost escaping.
Well, it's,
but I just hated work.
Sure.
I hated work. And that was my work. It was my love. It was my passion. It's all I wanted to do. And he just took that away from me.
Which is not great to keep your career on the up and up.
No,
so. So from there, I mean, if you look at the current setup of where the Boks are now, you know, we just spoke about a 57-0 hammering. You know, there was outrage in all quarters. Alistair could see his demeanor does not change any stage here. I'm not saying he needs to kick over water bottles or do anything really stupid or rash, but it doesn't seem like anything changes or phases him. Would you think that this is just indicative again of how the Springbok bar is lowered? Or with him, it's like, well, I'm going to keep this job regardless, so therefore I'll just carry on, and if it happens, it happens. Would that be a bit mean to say that?
No, I don't think he knows what to say. You know, like, you know, I bet you he was, when he was appointed as Springbok coach, he probably was the happiest day of his life. But sure. Then the reality sets in, and now, you know, all the things that you believe in and transformation, and suddenly you're wishing, I wish I could just pick the best.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, maybe I get into trouble for saying it, but I believe if you,
it's okay, I'll take the rap.
Will you take the rap? Yeah. Okay, I'll take it too. I'm happy to do so. But you know, it's I think I was telling you before is that, you know, I watched the Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
You're saying about these mass killings, and about they keep happening, and every time they happen, there's obviously there's shock and horror, and then there's anger, and then there's sympathy. But the whole time they go, listen, we're not allowed to talk about guns. It's not the time to talk about guns.
Yeah, it's sensitive. Or
it's too sensitive. And I'm going, we kind of have the same approach with our rugby. You know, it's like, transformation is so important. I believe that. But it's like a business. You know, you've got to get the grassroots right. If you're not getting grassroots right and you're having to do quotas in Springbok rugby, then you're failing. You're failing. I mean, listen, I started my own business, but I don't have the skills to be a CEO yet. I'm not the CEO of my own company. The guy that's the CEO is a guy that's got massive experience in that field.
Yep.
So he's the CEO of a company that he bought into later. But I started the company. But I don't have the right to be a CEO yet at the moment.
Okay.
So I believe that you need to develop those skills from a young age. And so SA Rugby needs to be getting the grassroots level right. They need to be building up through, so that by the time we get to Springboks, we're picking the best players. It's as simple as that to me.
Yeah, it really is that simple. And again, it's like Alistair could say, it kind of feels like, well, he probably agrees with you. And he'll probably say, yeah, Dave, you're right. But that's never going to happen. It's quick fix stuff. And we need to just try a plaster over everything in the Bok setup, because it's a plaster job every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time. It's getting us absolutely nowhere.
When is 57-0 a process? When is it okay. And I mean, somebody said that, Nick Mallett said he felt sorry for the players or whatever he said. I said, well, he clearly didn't have that emotion back in 99. but it's never okay. You know, when you're losing 57-0, that's like getting 10% for a test.
Exactly.
You know, it's never acceptable. Well, not where we want to be playing.
Well, exactly. But now, you know, there's no wholesale changes to the team as well. I know people always make a big thing about continuity. You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, is a conversation that these guys often have.
Yeah.
But when you've just lost 57-0, process or no process, or you can say, well, this happens against the All Blacks. Things get, you know, they run away with you. Bullshit. Yeah. There's so many excuses. The excuses are becoming the norm here. And the solution is this pie in the sky thing, which nobody really believes in. That's what I'm picking up as a fan right now.
Yeah.
And that's where I think I'm really frustrated.
I've tried to step back as well and look at that, because it's easy to be angry. It's easy to be negative about the 57-0. I'm also deeply saddened or whatever emotion you want to use there, and shocked for distraught for 57-0. But you also got to look at the way that the New Zealanders played that day. They are a brilliant team, yes, but everything clicked.
Yeah.
Everything clicked, and when a team like that does click, sometimes you're just on the tail end of a hiding, and that happened to be that day. It wasn't a reflection, the 57-0. Maybe it was just that they played that well that day. It's still not an excuse. It still shows the gaping hole between us and them.
Yeah.
But we do need to. I mean, if you were impartial and you watched that game, I think they even said it on the breakdown. If you watched the show, they said the All Blacks were so good that day that they might have beaten themselves. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
They were that good that day.
But now going forward to this week, okay, expectations are that we're not going to win, obviously.
But you see, I mean, Alistair Coetzee said it off to Australia after. I mean, how do you even say that?
Yeah, but I almost feel like this is the first time he's really spoken like the truth. But
yeah,
it's not a nail in his coffin, because now he's telling the truth, although inconvenient as it is. So what are the actual expectations for this team now? Where do they go from here? Because obviously Brendan Fenter and the whole coaching staff, Alistair Coetzee, the rugby media, they're all going to say, yeah, okay, it's a process. It's going to take a bit of time. The British and Irish Lions went down to New Zealand let's be honest, it's a makeshift tour. These people come together. Warren Gatland's their coach. So if you're not Welsh, you don't know the guy.
Yeah.
And he's got a certain idea, and they have to play. And they don't lose the first test and go, well, guys, it's a process. Hopefully, you know, next year we'll be better. No, it's that tour. You got to perform on that time.
Yeah.
Do you think the urgency's gone because the accountability's become so flexible and soft? I mean, do you really think that this is another problem? I know we've spoken about structures, and I think SA Rugby's problems are always bigger than one man or one coach or one player. I'm with you all 100%. The grassroots stuff needs to be addressed. And it maybe will only be great in 5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
But do you not think that right now, expectations are so low, but these guys are almost like they're feeding into this narrative like, oh, well, you know, we're not so great right now. We're going to get given time. Do you think that's a harmful thing for players to have in their mind?
It is. It is a harmful thing. And I think, you know, it's... Alistair Coetzee is never going to be able to pick the best. And what I mean by that is we've got so many players leaving and playing overseas because of the chance that they might just never get picked, even though they're good enough. So maybe he is picking the best of what we have right now, but he's never going to be able to pick the best, if you know what I mean. So we've got the issues that we have at home. We've got the problems with what the international teams can pay you. I mean, it's just there's a money thing that's, you know, another thing we can't ignore. But thirdly, you've got guys going, well, you know, with everything that's going on, no matter how good I am, I might actually never make the team. So I'd rather just take my chances and go play somewhere else.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm saying we've still got lots of good players.
We've got
lots of great players.
We do. We've got the biggest rugby, like you said, Stellenbosch, biggest rugby club in the world. We shouldn't have a problem with depth.
And if you watch a bit of Curry Cup or whatever, we've got great players who aren't white. Surprise. Who would have thought?
It's amazing.
We really do.
Yeah.
But I feel that how can this team still be so unchanged? They played against some pretty substandard opposition earlier in the season. Granted, they're only beaters in front of you. But there's got to be, like, New Zealand, the team they're putting out this weekend, people are saying is inexperienced. That team is as good as any team they can throw out right now because they keep changing guys up. So when they come into this team, even if they got four test caps, whatever, they know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Where is this team in this process that we speak of? Where are they trying different things? Why is Andrews Kassir playing every game at 15 when Warwick Gallant's a good player or Jesse Creel might be a better 15 than the 13?
Yeah.
Does that not worry you as well, how these guys, it's almost like they've got this lager mentality now mentally. It's like, well, it's going badly, but let's really play ourselves out of our ruts.
Well, I just think, you know, the difference between if we're going to talk about New Zealand and us is that New Zealand had their structures that are in place that have been going on probably since 95. You know, we carried on with the same, you know, we didn't develop. And as you know, owning a business, if you don't develop as a company, you're going to get stuck.
Especially and, you gotta innovate, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't innovate, you're going to get stuck and you're getting left behind. And we haven't changed anything. Suddenly we're now trying to catch up. And so with the New Zealand structures, you've got everyone agreeing on a specific type brand of rugby. They play it from grassroots all the way through. So when they get to the New Zealand side, they're playing the exact same rugby they've been playing since they were five. Yeah. And so when someone gets injured or when a Dan Carter retires, you just got the next guy that steps into it.
Next three guys, yeah.
And so the depth is massive, not because of the massive pool, but just because of the structures they have in place. And so the foundation is strong. It's like anything. You don't have to be you don't have to have the most players to be it's proven by New Zealand. You don't have to have
any decent Australian side will tell you that. Yeah.
But if you've got your structures right and your foundation right, and it goes back to the transformation thing. If you've got your structures right and your foundation right, by the time you get to the box, you can be picking the best players and they're going to know it.
Exactly. But I just feel like because we're trying so hard to get a result at the box level, is that we're trying hard but doing nothing. Yeah. So I agree. I think we've got one of the greatest feeder systems going. I mean, I've spent lots of time on this show talking about development and how we get talent through. And I've been to places where you see young talent coming through.
Yeah.
Black, white, whatever. We've got great talent coming through in this country. But if it's just, you look at the top and it's become so rotten. I'm not saying like corruption, like politics. It's become so rotten that these guys don't know really where they're going.
Yeah.
Now, take, for instance, someone like, you know, your career, which was, you know, it never maybe got its full potential because of these systems in place. These systems haven't changed. They haven't become better.
They haven't, nothing.
Look, obviously a coach always picks certain players because it's still a subjective thing they go through. So there's never an exact science there. But how many other great talents are we losing in this country? And then we get guys who just seem to can't get out of the team either.
Yeah.
You know, these are all things that, again, this is a 17-part series, this conversation, and there is no answer.
Yeah.
But it is hugely frustrating, and it's nice to get your views on this because I think it's also a very consistent view. Get our grassroots structures right, and then we can pick our best.
Yeah.
Right now, we don't even know how to pick our best because we try and do things that, I don't know, it's plastering over. Yeah. Anyway, Dave, we've got to wrap it up here. If you were playing for the box this weekend, how confident would you be in this team that it could actually be competitive?
Well, I read an article where who was Mark Keown said maybe this is the game we'll win because New Zealand seem to lose focus once they've won everything. They were bad against Australia. I'm like, it's such a sad thing to think that possibly we could actually win.
Because with a handicap.
With a handicap, because they're just not in it. I see they've picked their best side. Hopefully,
Well, they've got an inexperienced front row.
Yeah.
Obviously, Retallick's out because of his wife.
They've picked a strong side, should I say.
It's a bloody good side.
It's a very good side.
Backline's as good as it could be.
I don't know how confident I would be. I still believe I can.
Exactly. But this is the thing. It's like, do any of us have confidence for this weekend? It's the thing that I'm really getting at here.
No, I just think we'd be very surprised. We'd be ecstatic, obviously. But I think, at the end of the game and we've lost it, we'd all kind of just expect it.
Yeah. And margin-wise this time around? In Cape Town, which means it won't rain?
Before the last game, I said we'd lose easily, 10 to 15 points. And my prediction. To lose 57, I was flabbergasted. So I'm scared to make a prediction. I don't think that they'll have the 57-0 margin again. Looking at the last three games, they've all been big.
50 average, yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't want to put money on it. I don't think we will win. I hope in my heart of hearts that we do, but I think it'll be a surprise to every single one of us if we do. And we'll probably be saying, it's because New Zealand, wrapped it up and not because we played.
Yeah.
You don't just suddenly become a great team overnight.
No, exactly. And Dave, just to finish off with your work with the South African Rugby Legends, it's more than just a bunch of guys getting together, playing a match and having a few beers afterwards, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. It's absolutely. It's a great foundation and I try to do as much as I can for them. I've seen to myself, you talk about going to these places and you see the grassroots and you see these little kids playing rugby. It's incredible to watch and it's so inspiring to see the way they just love playing rugby, and it gives me hope for the future. And I hope that somehow our structures that SA Rugby can take the blindfolds off and see the potential we actually do have, and do it right. do it for rugby. Don't do it for their own personal agendas. Do it for rugby, because there are guys out there, and I've seen it. I've seen them the way they. I mean, these are little guys in townships. I mean, you know, they live in a shack, but they're the happiest little bunch of guys that all they want to do is play this game. So there's potential. There's ability. And if you give them enough love and enough attention, we could be great again at Springbok as a Springbok team.
I totally agree with you. If you want to interact with Dave on Twitter, it is at DVH09. That's Dave on Twitter. Dave, thanks so much for your time today. And look, I guess we can talk forever. I mean, your story of your career was very interesting. And I think there's just so many other stories that we never see, like what goes into these teams, why they lose, what's the reaction, what's it really like to be a player. And on social media, all you do is you just sling hurt around nowadays. Well, maybe we can also just sympathize with the players. You go through these tough times as well.
Yeah, remember, it's not their fault. Huh? These guys all want to play for their country. These guys all want to do their best. I don't think they go out there, you know, with the mentality of we're gonna lose.
But we're okay with losing.
No, they don't. And I do. I sympathize in that respect. But it's like anything. You're as good as your weakest link. And I think there are too many weak links. We got to fix those. But to end on a positive, like I said, I've seen the potential that's out there. Let's just do what's right for rugby.
Cool. And you can do what's right for sport by visiting thebounce.co.za. Bit of a stretch, but why not? Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at followthebounce, and go onto YouTube. Follow the Bounce, my account on YouTube. You can see all the videos there. Last week I played against Sean Hugo from the Sunshine Tour. You see how that got on. And I'll be putting together a little video around this and what goes into making a podcast. That's about it for this week. Thanks for joining me. Catch you back tomorrow. The Gareth Cliff Show, cliffcentral.com, 6 till 9 a.m. South African time. cliffcentral.com